You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. Coming up, the annual State of the Tribes address was delivered to the Wisconsin legislature this afternoon. We'll get analysis from two guests.
First, you might not know it today, but pit bulls were once America's favorite dog, the pet of choice for presidents, families, and TV shows. Who wanted a dog with friendliness and personality.
But the lineage of pit bulls as a fighting dog took root in the American mind, and the dogs have been seen since as menacing, dangerous, and hardwired to fight over the years. Our next guest looks at the history of pit bulls and tries to separate fact from fiction. Bronwyn Dickey joins us now. She's a contributing editor at Oxford American and the author of the book Pit Bull, The Battle Over an American Icon. Bronwyn, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Bronwyn, why have pit bulls been such a focal point for extremes over the years? The love and the hate and the demonizing, and then on the other hand, what you say is overprotection sometimes.
Well, I think first, probably because the dog itself is a little bit generic as dogs go. It's medium-sized, short-coated, and it's been used for all kinds of things by all kinds of people over the years. So there have always been a lot of them. And typically they've also been very working class, kind of blue collar dogs. So even back into the 17th century, there were people who were saying, oh, those are the dogs for people on the wrong side of town, et cetera, et cetera. And then you had people who really loved them and said, no, these are our family dogs. They're wonderful. So I think part of it really is that the dogs are kind of an inkblot test for whatever we humans want to project onto them.
And when we use the term pit bull, is it clear what dog we're talking about? Because it sounds like the term pit bull is generically applied to maybe three different actual breeds of dogs, not to mention mixed breeds.
Right. That's the stickiest part of this whole thing, is that the term pit bull has kind of morphed over the years to include pretty much anything anybody wants it to be, whether it's a dog with a blocky head or a dog with a brindle coat. But within that category, which I'm always careful to say, you know, pit bull is not a breed, just like hound is not a breed. It's a type. So it's a category, kind of like a bucket of different breeds of dog. But there, in the book, I define it as four specific breeds: the American Pit Bull Terrier, the American Staffordshire Terrier, the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, and a relatively new breed called the American Bully. But yeah, the big problem is that people kind of lump all these mixed breeds that may or may not have any kind of pit bull DNA in them into that category as well, which makes the statistics on things like bites pretty worthless.
And you adopted a pit bull, part of the impetus to launch you on this journey. What kind of things did you hear from people, friends and family, when you told them you were going to adopt this pit bull?
Yeah, it was one of the reasons that I knew I had kind of something more interesting than just an article in my hands was when my husband and I did adopt this dog, this, you know, totally normal shelter dog named Nola, from our local shelter. And because she bore this label called Pit Bull, people in our lives felt free to weigh in on the choice we had made and kind of comment on it in a way I don't think they would have if she had been any other kind of dog. So one female friend said, you know, I wouldn't do that. Those dogs will turn on you. My own mother claimed I must have a death wish. I mean, it was just this bizarre kind of maelstrom of commentary from the people in our lives, when really this was just, you know, a family dog who was perfectly lovely. So I realized that people's reactions to these dogs was a story in and of itself.
Well, you say family dog, and it's interesting because now, the image of the pit bull, I think, is being a little resurrected right now. But for a long time, it was as this fighting dog. But if we go back earlier than that, it sounds as though there were a couple of presidents who loved their pit bulls. This was the dog and the little rascals that trailed around. Right now, Patrick Stewart has a pit bull. He's not from that era, but I mean, there were these instances where society kind of loved pit bulls.
Oh, absolutely. In the Spanish-American War, by far the most common dog that was a mascot for both the Army and Navy was a little pit bull, because again, they're just kind of small and easy to, you know, they're just kind of pal around dogs. That's the way they were seen in that era. Gary Cooper had a pit bull, Helen Keller, you know, tons and tons of Teddy Roosevelt, tons of people loved these dogs. And so it wasn't just about their, quote, fighting reputation, though that has been with them, you know, since the beginning for a very long time. But they were seen, especially during the Depression, as kind of the the dog for the average Joe, the dog with the patch over his eye, that was unfussy and just kind of an all-around sidekick for the average person. And that's what was so kind of enticing and wonderful about them. And then when you see kind of people get more fascinated by pure breeds later on, especially in the 1950s, there was a big, big, big boom after the war when people had lots more money. Then kind of the AKC breed registration thing took off, and the kind of generic dog with a patch over his eye wasn't as much fun anymore.
We're talking with Bronwyn Dickey right now, contributing editor at Oxford American, and the author of the book we're discussing today. It's called Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon. And let's go back to that reputation that is still clinging today, this version of Pitbulls, as being sort of hardwired to fight, as being bred to be fighting dogs. Is there truth there?
Well, I mean, there's some truth to anything if you kind of parse it enough. In that the American Pit Bull Terrier, kind of the central core breed of this group, was developed in 1889 specifically as a fighting dog in Massachusetts. But the caveat there is that breeding for fighting is very hard to do. It isn't like breeding for retrieving or pointing, something that, like helps the dog secure food for itself. Dogs are social creatures. So breeding a dog that does not want to live with other dogs or can't tolerate other dogs, you're pushing the evolutionary boulder up the hill. So historical estimates place the number of purpose-bred pit bulls that could actually do that grim work of combat as between 1% and 10%. And the rest, the washouts, were just, as I said, these kind of generic farm dogs, some of them, family dogs, plenty of the others of them. So yes, while today there are still certain lines of dog that are bred for that purpose, they are vanishingly small compared to how many dogs that look this way are out there. The biggest thing most of these dogs have in common today is that, like most other dogs in America, they're bred for how they look. So people are purchasing them because they are attracted to the look. They like the kind of stocky, big-headed, sometimes imposing pit bull look, but they aren't necessarily being selected for those behaviors.
Well, and you wonder if other dogs might have members among them, let's say just Shetland sheepdogs, for instance. Maybe as a whole, the temperament of the breed is supposed to be kind of mild-mannered and quiet. But what if you get a really scrappy Shetland sheepdog? I mean, that dog perhaps could be a fighter too. Do we know whether those fighters among pit bulls, those numbers are any higher than for any other breed?
I mean, there hasn't been any kind of peer-reviewed research on that. But, I guess it would be likelier since there are certain lines of this particular dog that are still used for that purpose. But I think part of what was kind of a mixed bag about a lot of the awareness campaigns of the 90s and early 2000s, and then finally the Michael Vick case, was that it gave this perception that dog fighting was absolutely everywhere, and that pit bulls were only involved in dog fighting, and somehow everything about their narrative had to come back to dog fighting somehow. You had people claiming that if a pit bull was nice, it must be some kind of bait dog in a dog fighting operation. And that's just not true. I mean, and that's never been true. Most of these dogs, like most dogs in America, just fall into the same kind of bell curve, where you have the really abnormally tolerant ones on one end and the really abnormally intolerant ones way at the other end. But most in the middle are just trying to get through the day like the rest of us.
And you write about what has happened to the breed, especially during things like breed bans in cities. What has the breed, or the generic term, what have pit bulls gone through as a society? We might have been kind of upset and fearful about them.
Right. Well, after certain, kind of like anything else in the media, after you have a really horrible incident and that gets amplified nationally and sometimes internationally, it's understandable that people would be fearful. So especially in the 1980s, there was this kind of, in the book, I describe it as a moral panic that traced to a few incidents that were then amplified on a global scale. where, you know, someone might have been injured or died, and which is a horrible, horrible tragedy. But all the news coverage gave the impression that these things were happening all the time, when in fact they weren't. So as a result of that, you actually had this period of kind of a witch hunt type persecution, where, especially following the summer of 1987, you had dogs being, you know, firebombed with Molotov cocktails, dogs being hanged, families turning in their dogs to the shelters because they were afraid that their neighbors would somehow take their rage out on the animals, that kind of thing. And for many years, these dogs were not able to be adopted out from any animal shelter at all. They were euthanized on site. So add to that, in Miami and Denver, two cities that have had citywide breed bans, where basically pit bulls, especially in Denver, have been rounded up and euthanized. And that's a pretty scary scenario. And I think now we're kind of understanding that was a drastic overreaction, when in fact, to solve the problems of bites and very rare tragedies of deaths, we really needed to be looking at human-dog interactions, not just looking at the dog.
Bronwyn Dickey is with us right now. She's a contributing editor at Oxford American and a contributor at other publications, and the author of the new book called Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon.
And we want to hear from you. Do you own a pitbull? Do you think they've been treated fairly? Or do you think there's a reason to mistrust pitbulls? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up our conversation in just a little bit here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. And Bronwyn Dickey stays with us now as we discuss her new book called Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think why we have such mixed feelings over pit bulls? Do you own a pit bull? What's your experience been like? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.
And, Rowan, I want to ask you about one of the topics you get to in the book, which I think is pretty compelling. You say that for not just pit bulls, not just the dogs, but for the people who own the dogs, that you think that as a society, we have moved them outside of the circle of compassion, and they're seen as other and not as worthy, both the people and the dogs. Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. And that was by far the most illuminating part of this process for me, was seeing how much the history of our own prejudices and our own kind of social inequalities played into the history of these dogs. As you say, not only are the dogs kind of branded as other, in that even in medical studies, there are studies that divide dogs called pit bulls into one category and then all other dogs into another. Same thing with news headlines. If there's a bad story, you know, someone gets bitten, it's a pit bull bite. Whereas if it's any other type of dog, then it's just a dog bite. As though these are not domestic dogs that have been with us for many hundreds of years. But also in terms of how we see the kind of people who are attracted to these dogs, who take these dogs in, who have built their lives around these dogs. For a period in the early 2000s, when no pit bulls were allowed to be adopted out of shelters, I have some, you know, quotes from several shelter workers from that period when they say, you should see the type of person that wants a pit bull. They're just disgusting. Or, you know, the very fact of wanting a pit bull means that something's wrong with you. And I think we've come a long way since then. But I think we need to understand that dogs are so woven into the fabric of our lives that it's very easy for us to kind of project our own prejudices and fears and hang-ups and tribalism onto them. And it's very hard to know where the dog ends and where we begin sometimes.
I want to get to our callers now. We've got Colette on the line with us, calling from Lac des Flambeaux. Colette, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say I've had the American Pit Bull Terrier for 36 years, And my first dog I got in Minnesota, and I spent the next 8 years fighting the bans on the dogs. I got the first bill passed statewide in the state of Minnesota that keeps any town from prohibiting by breed. And since that time, you know, I've continually had American Pit Bull Terriers. Currently, I have one that a lot of people just gravitate towards. The color is defined as blue. It's a gray color, and he's a shorter, stocky. And I'm just always amazed at the number of people that come up and pet him, and he's a very happy boy. And then I tell people what he is, and they're just totally astounded. It's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know this was a pit bull.
Colette, do you think that some of the apprehension that as a society we've had about pit bulls, is it starting to wane, or do you think that it's still there?
Well, I think it is still there, but I'm seeing so many more of the dogs. All across the country, you know, I try to be a good ambassador, and my dog before I was taking into veteran centers, and he was a certified therapy dog that came from a rescue in Albany, New York. But what I'm seeing is if people try to bring the dog into normal situations and educate people, it does help.
But all right. Thank you, Colette. A lot of perspective there. Colette has spent a long time working with pit bulls and with legislation surrounding pit bulls, too. And, Bronwyn, is that typical sometimes when people find, maybe discover this kind of dog that they love, they happen to be pit bulls, that they do get involved, maybe even on the level that Colette was?
Yeah, I think that's fairly common, at least as an interest, if not people who go out and do as much work as she did, which is wonderful. When you have something that you love very much, everyone thinks the thing they love is special. And so when you find that it's been persecuted in this way, I think a lot of people are very motivated to get into that kind of activism. But also something else she said really kind of struck a chord with me when she said how many people gravitate toward her dog. One of the things that really surprised me in this process was how positive people were, just people out on the street, how either neutral or positive they were about these dogs. I expected to kind of, from the media stories, that pit things, not to coin a phrase, but that kind of make things half and half. I expected to get half people who love the dogs and half people who didn't. And I could count on one hand the people I talked to who really had a very strong negative reaction. Just when I was out and about, you know, pulling random strangers off the street and saying, what do you think about pit bulls? Most people either they didn't know, they hadn't had any experience with them, and they were a little wary maybe, or they were very positive saying, oh, you know, I'm glad that people are giving the dogs a chance. So I think that the kind of the way America feels about the dog is a lot more positive than sometimes we're led to believe. I think they're really coming around and seeing that really all dogs are truly unique and individual.
Colette, thanks a lot for that call. And we're going to move next to Tara in Madison. Tara, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate the things that you had to say and the thought that you put behind the history of the breed and sort of the changes that have gone on and thinking about the breed and its role in the community. I think that right now perhaps we're in a position where the pendulum has swung from one extreme to almost the other in terms of how society views these dogs. I've been a breeder of a different breed for a number of years, and it's a large breed that I always need to make sure that I'm thinking about how best to train it, how best to represent it in public, the type of people that would be appropriate to own this breed and how to mentor them in making sure that the dog is successful and integrated into a family and into a community. And I think that we need to do the same thing with pit bulls. There are statistics out there that show that there are problems with the pit bulls, and I don't know that it's the breed itself so much as perhaps people's desire to believe that all dogs are absolutely wonderful and we need to just shower them with love. And sometimes that doesn't work in a particular breed or in a particular individual animal in a breed. These are a dog that are larger and they can cause damage to people when they aren't managed properly.
Tara, thank you for that phone call. And briefly, Bronwyn, what do you say to that? She's talking about different management techniques for different breeds.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in what she said that I would completely agree with, in that, you know, when something becomes kind of a cause célèbre, you'll always have a number of people who see it. You know, if there's completely black on one side, then other people want to see it completely white. So I have certainly spoken to people over the course of this research who, you know, felt so strongly about kind of the cause of pit bulls that they did not want to admit that genetics play any role in dog behavior, which, of course, any behaviorist would tell you is just not true. In any human or animal or any creature, genes and environment are always working together. So we need to respect that and understand it. As far as, you know, statistics showing certain breeds being problematic, again, I would caution against putting too much weight behind those, because we really don't know which dogs are being defined as pit bulls. You know, it would be like if you're kind of comparing specific makes and models of cars, like the Toyota Corolla or the Ford Expedition, to all sedans or all SUVs.
And we're out of time. We have to leave it there, Bronwyn. It's been a fascinating discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Thanks,
that was Bronwyn Dickey, contributing editor at Oxford American and the author of the new book, Pitbull, The Battle Over an American Icon. And we'd love to hear from you. You can still keep the conversation going. Let us know what you're thinking, your experience with pit bulls. If you're a landlord, any thoughts there? You can let us know over on the Central Time Facebook page.